Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advanced stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538. We have an hour facing us here. On WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, broadcasting live from Morgan State University here in Baltimore, Maryland, across the country and nation with Free Speech TV in the middle of their fund drive. Support that. And, of course, streaming live at steinershow.org. We're going to look at the economy nationally and across the globe during the course of this hour. The first part of our program, we are joined by Robert Kuttner. Robert Kuttner is co-founder and co-editor of the American Prospect magazine, distinguished senior fellow at the think tank Demos. You can link on to his new article at Huffington Post from our website, steinershow.org. And Robert Kuttner, welcome. It's good to have you back once again.
Good to be with you.
So let's start with this deficit reduction package. And I want to ask you some questions that come to my mind, come out of Glenn Hubbard's piece in the New York Times this morning. He's a former Undersecretary of Treasury for Taxation under George Bush. But an economic advisor to George Bush, but we'll get to that in a moment. But we in America are getting wrapped up in this deficit commission and what they're saying we need to cut. And I found your article in the Huffington Post yesterday to be very hard-hitting in terms of saying, literally, you think that what we're being given is bunk. We're being served a dish that's unpalatable, unnecessary, but no one's giving a kind of argument in the mainstream press.
Yeah, well, I think it's perverse, and I think I mean that literally in the sense that it would make things worse. So let's divide what's perverse about it into two parts. The first problem is that when you are in a depression, and let's not mince words here. This is not a recession. This is a depression. I'll come back to that in a minute.
All right.
But when you're in a depression, the last thing in the world that you want is austerity. The last thing that you want is budget cutting. The last thing you want is belt tightening. What you want is more public investment, and you want bigger deficits. That's how we finally got out of the Great Depression. We really ended it with World War II, where the government spent a ton of money, and as a byproduct of mobilizing for war, we put 12 million people back to work. We invested massively in new technology. And we came out of that war with a huge debt. But guess what? Everybody was working. And so the debt didn't hurt the economy. We had a big boom after World War II. The economy actually became more equal. We had the GI Bill. We had all kinds of public investments like interstate highways. And we paid off that debt. So the last thing you want to do during a depression is to have a belt tightening. And let me say why it's a depression and not just a recession.
Please.
A recession is a normal downturn in the economy. And you cure it with, you know, lowering interest rates or a little bit of public works spending, and then people get their jobs back and spend money at the store, and then factories start rehiring, stores start putting people back to work. In a depression, the banking system is damaged. People's mortgages are underwater. Jobs don't get created. People don't get their purchasing power back. And so factories don't invest in new hires. And the whole thing stays stuck in first gear. It never gets back into high gear. And even though the unemployment rate is not quite as high as it was during the Great Depression, it's the same kind of dynamic. So we ought to call it by its name. We ought to call it a depression. Also, the reason it's a depression is that we have this horrible situation with mortgages where one family in three has a mortgage that's worth more than the value of the house.
Right.
And the main asset that middle-class and working-class families have, the equity in their home, is going south. And when you have the damage to housing and the damage to the job market and the damage to banks that we have right now, the worst medicine you can possibly throw at it is to reduce the deficit, because that's just going to put more people out of work.
And that is so counterintuitive. I mean, talk a bit about that some more, because that's one of the things I want to – I mean, when we talk about the debt that came out of World War II and how that was a good thing in terms of building what happened in America next and what you just stated now, I mean, that is so counterintuitive to what most people think and what we're being given.
Yeah, I think the fallacy is that people compare – their own household budget to the government's budget.
Right, right.
So, you know, you and I have to live within our means, and we put some money away for our retirement. We save some money. We can send our kids to college.
We hope so.
Et cetera. That's not how an economy works. When the whole economy is producing below its production potential, and individuals don't have the money to make purchases that allow factories and stores to buy to employ other people, the whole thing just gets stuck in a rut. And the only thing that can get it out of that rut is the government borrowing money, doing public works, putting people back to work, or, if you like, fighting a war. So there's a difference between the household budget and the budget of the economy as a whole. And, of course, the great prophet of this view of the economy, and he was a revolutionary in his day, he's still a revolutionary because the view is so controversial, was the British economist John Maynard Keynes. And Roosevelt was kind of an intuitive Keynesian. He practiced deficit spending and public works spending to put people back to work even before he ever read a line of John Maynard Keynes. So anyway, the first point here is that when you have a depression or if you want a severe recession, you don't want to cut deficit spending. You want to increase deficit spending. And then not only does that put people back to work, but it makes the economy more productive. I mean, the American Society of Civil Engineers says we got a $3 trillion backlog of basic infrastructure, roads and sewers and water systems and never mind high-speed rail, just the basic transit. And then if you talk about 21st century infrastructure, smart electric grids and clean energy and broadband, I mean, there are trillions and trillions of dollars that could be spent that would make the economy more productive and more competitive. So the first problem with this recipe is that it's the wrong medicine in a deep recession. But then even if you buy the premise that down the road we need to reduce the deficit, they go about reducing the deficit in the wrong way. There's all this rhetoric about everything's got to be on the table. Well, everything isn't on the table. For instance, they talk about reducing Social Security's long-term deficit, which is really pretty minor. I mean, Social Security's in surplus for the next 27 years, but let's assume that you wanted to, shore up Social Security for our grandchildren. You know what they do? They propose closing the deficit in Social Security over the long term, 92% of it by cutting benefits and 8% by raising taxes. And as you know, only the first $106,000 of income is subject to the payroll tax. So wealthy people, they stop paying Social Security tax when their income hits about $106,000.
Exactly.
And if you uncap that, you could have Social Security be solvent for the next 1,000 years. Then they say everything should be on the table, but there are no tax increases to speak of. They close some tax loopholes, but it's all on the spending side. And then to make matters worse, the Bush tax cuts, $4 trillion over 10 years, $1 trillion of that go into very wealthy people. That's not on the table at all, because the guys on the deficit commission, and there are some women too, the people on the deficit commission, know that the Republicans would say, forget it. And I think what's really sad here is that the Republicans are playing hardball, and the Democrats aren't. I mean, the Democrats, you know, meet the Republicans halfway, and the Republicans laugh in their face. So also, the guy who is the Democratic co-chair of this commission,
mm-hmm.
a guy named Erskine Bowles.
Erskine Bowles, right.
Who was briefly Clinton's chief of staff, but that's not really who he is. He's an investment banker. He spent most of his career on Wall Street. He's on the board of trustees or board of directors of Morgan Stanley. He gets $335,000 a year for attending a few board meetings. Now, that's more money than 99% of Americans make for working at least 40 hours a week, 5 days a week. So, you know, it's no wonder this guy doesn't have a clue about how regular people live. And the really sad thing to me, and I was recently on CNN debating David Walker, who
yes.
was the head of the Peterson Foundation, that's
right.
propagating all this nonsense, is that the media seems to buy the following story. This is just partisan bickering. And if Democrats would just agree to cut some benefits and Republicans would just agree to raise some taxes, we could balance the budget and then everything would be fine. And I said to Walker, wait a minute. Explain to me what is the problem that you were trying to solve. Are you trying to get the deficit down or are you trying to fix the economy? Because the number one problem is that the economy is broken. People are out of work. People are losing their homes. And getting the deficit down before we get the economy back on track is actually going to make that worse. But you have the whole mainstream media, even fairly liberal papers like the New York Times, buying this story that if only the two parties will compromise, we could cut the deficit. Well, yeah, we could cut the deficit, but then what?
Right.
And if we cut the deficit too soon, we're just going to throw more people out of work.
We're talking with Robert Kuttner. You can join us here at 410-319-8888. We love people around Baltimore, around Maryland, around the listening area in Washington, D.C., in Virginia and Maryland to join us. People across the country will give us our toll-free number up soon right now, 410-319-8888. On your cell phone, it's not toll-free. I mean, it is toll-free. So join us here. Your thoughts on where we're going with the economy in America. You're listening to us here on 88.9 FM, WEAA, the voice of the community here in Baltimore, Maryland, at Morgan State University on Free Speech TV, in the middle of their fund drive. And, of course, you're watching us streaming live at steinershow.org, 410-319-8888. Robert Kuttner, his article is pasted on our website. You can see it there. He's co-founder and co-editor of the American Prospect magazine and distinguished senior fellow at Think Tank Demos, 410-319-8888. Let me ask you something. One of the things that you mentioned was about the New York Times and most major papers in this country are kind of buying into this. And there was an interesting article up in, I'm sure you saw, by Glenn Hubbard, who is the dean of Columbia Business School and was a chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors under George Bush and also was undersecretary of Treasury for taxes, I believe. And let me just throw some of his arguments and see what you think. But I thought there was one very telling sentence here in the second paragraph where he said that we are in a difficult situation in large part because we've designed entitlements for a welfare state we cannot afford. We have used the tax code as a vehicle for special purpose spending that weakens both the efficiency and fairness of our tax system. Now, those two lines there, in many ways, the way we've structured this has caused, maybe you'll disagree with it, has caused the welfare, the underpinning for Americans to fall apart. We're not investing in it. I mean, talk about that contradiction when we talk about this economy and the different viewpoints about that.
Well, let's talk about the American welfare state. So if you look at the rich countries of the world, the United States has the weakest, most feeble system of social supports of any advanced country. Whether you're talking about the lack of universal health insurance, I mean, at some point during the year, about 100 million people go without health insurance. Whether you're talking about the complete lack of comprehensive child care or early childhood education. We also have one of the worst unemployment insurance systems in terms of how few weeks of coverage and how low the ratio of unemployment benefits to lost income is. And our retirement system is one of the worst in the advanced world in terms of how relatively little it pays retired people compared to how much they made during their working life. So how can this be? Well, other countries simply have more progressive tax systems. They tax wealthy people at higher rates in order to pay benefits for ordinary people. And the reason that our welfare state is so stingy, and by welfare state, by the way, I don't mean, you know, people who are on welfare.
Right. That's important.
One little tiny part of it. But welfare state is a term that social scientists use to refer to the whole basket of social benefits that people get, everything from health insurance to child care to Social Security to unemployment compensation. And if you look at those, we're the stingiest country in the advanced world. And, you know, if we had higher taxes on rich people, we could afford decent social benefits. So what Hubbard is saying We've designed entitlements that we can't afford. That's just malarkey. What he really means is we've made a decision to tax ordinary working people at the same rate as very wealthy people, and as a result, the society doesn't have enough money to pay for the benefits that people in other wealthy countries take for granted. So, there's no trade-off between having adequate productive investments and having adequate social benefits. You just have to decide to tax very rich people at a reasonable rate. And I guess another piece of this is the problem with our health system. We spend more and we get less than any other country in the world. We spend about 16% of the total income in the economy on health insurance, and we don't insure tens of millions of people. Now,
right.
How can that possibly be? Well, we have this private insurance industry that takes out just a huge cut that goes to the middleman. It doesn't go to the doctor. It doesn't help the patient. It just makes the insurance company rich. Then we got drug companies who, in other countries, their prices are controlled. Their profits are limited. And drugs overseas are treated like social goods. In the United States, they're treated like how much money can we possibly gouge out of patients and doctors. And if you reform drug companies and you reformed insurance companies and had universal health insurance like Medicare for everybody, you could insure everybody for lower costs. I mean, the average advanced country spends about 9% of their total national income on health care and covers everybody. We spend 16%, and we leave tens of millions of people uncovered. So if you fix that, we could balance the budget. If you just fix the health insurance mess, we could balance the budget.
Not to mention the wars in Iraq and the money we're paying for pharmaceuticals.
Sure, of course. So, I'm looking at Hubbard's piece. I just have it right in front of me.
Uh-huh.
And he says, we've used the tax code as a vehicle for special purpose spending that weakens the efficiency and the fairness of the tax system. Well, yeah, we have. But I would mean something very different by those words than what Professor Hubbard means. What I mean by it is we've let wealthy people off the hook. In the post-war boom, you know, the top tax rate was 91% if you were a gazillionaire. And now hardly anybody pays more than about 25%. And Warren Buffett, a billionaire with a social conscience, pointed out that his secretary pays a higher tax rate than he does. So what Hubbard means by tax reform and what I mean by tax reform are two very different things. I mean a progressive tax system so that the wealthier you are, the higher rate of tax you pay.
And it seems to me one of the things we have to, we're going to open the phones here. A lot of people are calling in, so I want to get them on this conversation before you have to leave us. And we turn to a conversation from Geneva on the international situation. 410-319-8888. Robert Kuttner is our guest. He is co-founder and co-editor of the American Prospect magazine and distinguished senior fellow at the think tank Demos. You can read him all the time in Huffington Post. 410-319-8888. And Charlie, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. It's great to hear you on the air once again.
Thank you.
So I know it's been a while. Hey, you know, I first voted when I was in college for Ronald Reagan. Why? Because I bought into this whole trickle-down malarkey, to use the word I just said. Well, you know, through the years, I've been management. I've sat across the table from union people, and now, you know, I'm out working for myself practically, for a big company. But I'm just really disillusioned. And I've come to the realization that, you know, it's not Democrat versus Republican or liberal versus conservative, really. It's the very, very rich versus the rest of us. And we don't have a prayer. How do we compete? What chance do we have when they, you know, when the decks are stacked against all of us, and it's both sides, this whole debacle of bailing out these billionaire bankers, and meanwhile, what does it do? What does it end up doing for the rest of us except disillusion us?
Charlie, go ahead, Robert.
Well, I think Charlie's, is it Charlie or Shelley? I think he's absolutely right. And, you know, when Clinton was president, the Treasury Secretary was Bob Rubin from Goldman Sachs. So then Bush becomes president, and the Treasury Secretary is Hank Paulson from Goldman Sachs. So you can have a Democrat from Goldman Sachs, or you can have a Republican from Goldman Sachs.
But you'll have somebody from Goldman Sachs sitting there.
Yeah, and you know, when Obama was elected and we all got our hopes up, who does he hire to be his economic advisors? Well, first of all, he hires Tim Geithner, who had been Ben Bernanke's sidekick under Bush, running the New York branch of the Federal Reserve Bank. And then he hires Larry Summers, who had been Bob Rubin's sidekick under Clinton when they deregulated the economy. I blame the Clinton administration every bit as much as the Bush administration mm-hmm. for the banking meltdown, because it was under Clinton that they did most of the deregulating. So, you know, you can have Wall Street running the country under the Democrats, or you can have Wall Street running the country under the Republicans.
But one thing a lot of people are waiting to see is if these Democrats will now kind of stand up for the American people.
Well, I've been waiting. I mean, I was a big fan of Obama's. And, you know, I respect the fact that he looked for areas of common ground, ways of bridging differences. But you do that for a few months, and then when the other side pummels you, no matter how conciliatory you are, then it's time to stand up and fight. So he just got pummeled. The Democrats just got pummeled in the midterm. And what's he going to do? And I'm afraid that he's going to try and meet them halfway all over again, and they're just going to, you know, whip him one more time. It's very disappointing. It's very painful, because here was a guy who showed that he could really inspire people as a candidate, but that's only the beginning. Then you have to inspire people and produce real change as president. So I certainly hope that he wakes up and behaves more like Truman than like Carter or Clinton, and stands up for regular people. Unfortunately, this deficit commission was appointed by Obama. Most of the people on the deficit commission believe what Glenn Hubbard does, that we need to tighten our belts in the middle of a depression. And I've been waiting for Obama to say, no, we're not going to do any belt tightening until the economy's on the road to recovery. We're not going to take it out of Social Security. We're not going to take it out of social spending. But I haven't heard him say that yet.
Let's get another caller in here, too. 410-319-8888. Russ, you're on the air.
Greetings, Mark, to you and your guests.
Good to have you with us.
Great. Mark, the two quick points. One is, I hear all the hoopla about corporate taxes and the such, but I've heard that 75% of American corporations don't pay income tax in the first place. So how much lower can you go than zero? And secondly, there are a couple of recent events that really trouble me, because I don't know, we're running out of time to do whatever it is we think we need to do, because number one, when we were sashaying around with Musharraf and the Pakistanis last year before, the Indians took their reserves and bought gold instead of buying American debt onto the stock market. And secondly, today I hear the Koreans have just raised their interest rates after the president's visit. So I'd like to hear your guests commentate on those, please.
Thank you so much for this. Robert Kuttner?
Well, it's not a good situation when the United States is at the mercy of other countries, whether it's the Koreans or the Indians or the Chinese, to buy our bonds. I mean, during World War II, we had war bonds, and people patriotically bought war bonds and paid for the cost of the war. And the problem is we're not manufacturing enough stuff anymore, so that we're importing so much of it from overseas, and then we got to turn around and borrow money to pay for it from the same people who are cleaning our clocks, taking our jobs. So we ought to be rebuilding our economy, and then we won't have to be so dependent on whether the Chinese and the Indians and the Koreans are going to buy our bonds or not.
I mean, I think that the we'll talk a bit about it in the next half an hour, is the whole issue of the G20, what happened. I think most Americans, when they read what happened in Europe, are very confused about why it fell apart and what the real issues are.
Well, it fell apart partly because the United States has much less leverage than it used to. The Chinese are coming on like gangbusters, and we're dependent on them to buy our government debt. You know, we may think of ourselves as the most powerful country in the world. We still are militarily, but we are rapidly ceasing to be economically. And so Obama or any other president can go to the G20 and he can say, look, we need a trade deal with the Koreans, or look, we need a deal so that companies don't manipulate their currencies. And other countries can say, no, we're not going to do that. And it's not like the old days when the United States could call the tune.
As we conclude this part of our conversation today, Robert Kuttner, I appreciate you being part of this show. I mean, I wonder what it takes, though, from your perspective. You write about this all the time. Many people are talking about it, Huffington Post and other places, and some of the alternative media. But to get the problem is that the conversation is controlled by an establishment media that doesn't let this part of the argument be had.
Well, I think that's right. I think, you see, a president has the power to take back the conversation. I mean, that's why I'm somewhat distressed that President Obama, although he was so eloquent as a candidate, really hasn't done that as a president. So there's two ways to change the conversation, right? One way is to have a president who is really courageous and tough and takes back the conversation. And we saw that under Roosevelt. We saw that under Lincoln. We saw that under Lyndon Johnson before he blew it all in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Johnson was a great civil rights president. And the other way to do it is to build a social movement, to build a mass movement like the civil rights movement or the women's movement or the disability rights movement or the gay rights movement. And the only way we've really made social progress in this country, or the labor movement, of course, is when people have geared up and built a movement, and we've made real progress when you have a movement that has a rendezvous with a great progressive president. And right now we have neither, so that the media is corporate controlled, Wall Street's calling the tune on both parties, and that has to change or the economy is going to keep going right on down the drain.
Robert Kuttner, we look forward to having you back. This has been great.
Thanks
having
so
you.
Much.
Thank you so much for your time. It's been great.
Great to be with you.
And we will. You can just go to thesteinershow.org and link on to Robert Kuttner's writings, see what he's been saying and writing about, co-founder and co-editor of the American Prospect magazine, distinguished senior fellow at the think tank Demos. Those who are calling in around the country and everywhere else, stay with us because we'll get you on the phones with our next guest as we come back. We talk to Marian Jensen from the International Labor Organization, coordinator of their trade and employment program. Some very interesting perspectives on what's happening around the globe. That we need to hear as we kind of think about what's going on in our own country. 410-319-8888 is the number here. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information, www.mecu.com. I'm sure you contact them. They'll tell you wherever you are in America where to get you your local credit union as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back.